It's the Nachum Segal Network, and this time each and every week we get an opportunity to explore some great books, wonderful releases that are out there from our friends at Koren Publishers. Go to korenpub.com, K-O-R-E-N-pub.com. It seems that this time of year, I mean all through the year, but especially this time of year, they are always releasing amazing works to the public. Koren Publishers Jerusalem announced the publication of the Koren Pirkei Avot, a brand new Hebrew-English with translation by Rabbi Jonathan Sachs and commentary by Rabbi Mark D. Angel. Pirkei Avot, translated as Ethics of the Fathers, is a collection of rabbinic teachings that instructs us how to live wisely and ethically. The Koren Pirkei Avot combines a beautiful graphic approach, for which Koren Publishers Jerusalem is renowned, with the eloquence of Rabbi Sachs and the prolific insights of Rabbi Mark D. Angel. In Koren's signature fashion, the Koren Pirkei Avot aligns the Hebrew and English text and features a linear layout that breaks up each chapter phrase by phrase, line by line, facilitating comprehension and pronunciation of the text for each reader. Rabbi Angel's commentary looks at the personalities of the sages in Pirkei Avot and the context in which they live by bringing in sources from a broad range of thinkers and teachers. Rabbi Angel's commentary is accessible to readers of all religious backgrounds and levels of observance. Rabbi Angel is Rabbi Emeritus of Congregation Sheirat Israel in New York City, directs the Institute for Jewish Ideas and Ideals, which fosters an intellectually vibrant, compassionate, and inclusive Orthodox Judaism. The author and editor of 27 books, he's co-founder of the International Rabbinic Fellowship, a worldwide association of modern Orthodox rabbis. Information, you can go to jewishideas.com. Rabbi Mark Angel, welcome to the Nachum Segal Network.
Thank you so much. It's jewishideas.org.
Oh, I apologize. Jewishideas.org, as it says right here. Yes. jewishideas.org. We'll get people further information about that. It's so interesting. When I opened this brand new Pirkei Avot, it was the first thing I noticed before I even saw that it was part of the advanced word about the book, and that was the breakdown, the generational, the continuum breakdown of the era in which the people who contributed to Pirkei Avot lived. And I always have a theory when it comes to where people live and what was surrounding them, that that has a greater effect on some of the things that they may have decided or may have suggested than we think. For instance, Rabbi Angel, I'll give you my own personal theory, although it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, of course. I always say that those who will not drink water outside of the sukkah likely had a sukkah an inch away from their house, and those who are more liberal in the approach likely had to schlep up and down to a community sukkah miles away. So conditions sometimes do, in my opinion at least, influence the way people think and conclude. How does it work that way in Pirkei Avot? How are things broken up in terms of the authorship of Ethics of the Fathers that might alter or suggest a certain path or a certain angle of thinking?
It's a very, you make a very interesting point. People often look at the Pirkei Avot or the Talmud in general and think it's one monolithic work that just came out of heaven at one time. But of course, it's not so. The Pirkei Avot is really a work of a number of generations, beginning before the destruction of the second temple until about the year 200 after the destruction. So we're talking about maybe 300 year plus of different rabbis dealing with different circumstances. So some of them were writing while the Beit HaMikdash was still thriving. Others were just writing just as the temple was on the verge of collapse and right after the collapse.
Right.
And then some were writing a generation or two afterwards, trying to put the pieces back together and create a Judaism, strengthen the Judaism and the faith of the Jewish people at a time when people were very depressed.
So those national events can have what? Can have an influence on one's attitude, on one's direction in life, on one's message to the people? What can it influence?
It influences everything. I believe that whenever these rabbis were writing, they were writing with the eye on eternity. They were trying to give wisdom that's relevant to all generations. They weren't seeing themselves as creations of a particular generation. On the other hand, they had a mission. Their mission was to teach Judaism, to teach the Torah, and they understood, especially in the generation of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and others right after the destruction of the temple, they had to kind of rally the forces and give people a message that would encourage them to stay the course, to maintain their commitment to Torah, and to teach Torah when there's no longer a Beit HaMikdash, the temple is destroyed, the Jews are dispersed, they're under Roman rule. And then, of course, we get the generation of Rabbi Akiva when they were dealing with the Bar Kokhba revolution.
Right.
So this is each rabbi was trying to write truth through the prism of truth. On the other side, they also worked within a certain historical context that definitely impacted on the way they were thinking.
Is there any blatant example, something where it seems that because of circumstance, because of conditions, a certain Torah giant, you know, presented a piece of advice, let's call it, or one of the ethics of the fathers in a certain way?
It's also a very good question. I'm not sure I can give you an answer right off the bat, but towards the end of the Pirkei Avot, there's an interesting story about Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. He says once he was walking along the road, and he met a man, and the man said, "Rabbi, where do you come from?" And he said, "I come from a great city of sages and scribes." And the man said to the rabbi, "If you are willing to live with us, I will give you 1,000,000 gold dinars, right, as well as precious stones and pearls." Right. Terrific offer. Most rabbis don't get such good offers. And Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma said, "Nope. Were you to give me all the silver and gold in the world, I would never live any place except in a place of Torah." Now, that's a very interesting philosophy, and it's a philosophy that could be trying to give advice to people who are living in a very difficult time. In other words, there's so many pressures outside. We better stay close to ourselves. We better study Torah. We better create an island of Torah and not be tempted by any other considerations.
Yeah.
That's one point of view.
Right.
However, it seems to me that the very next statement of the Pirkei Avot refutes that. Because if everyone would have followed Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, there would be no rabbis, no teachers in small communities everywhere. Everyone would simply look out for themselves and let the rest of the people fail. So the very next Pirkei Avot tells us that the next paragraph tells us that God had 5 possessions: the Torah, heaven and earth, Abraham, Israel, and the temple. Each of those things represents a universal truth. The Torah is not just given for people to live in an island. It's given to the universe. It's given to create a good world for everybody. Heaven and earth, that's heaven and earth. Abraham was a father of all nations, mm-hmm, to try to teach monotheism to everyone. Israel is supposed to be a light into the world. The temple in Jerusalem, they offered offerings for all the 70 nations. In other words, while Yosef ben Kisma is reflecting, let's contract our vision, the very next Mishnah is telling us, let's expand our vision. We haven't lost the war yet. We have a big mission out there. We have to be able to bring the message of Torah to a much bigger constituency, not give up the fight.
Interesting. All right, Rabbi Dr. Mark D. Angel is with us, talking about the Koren Pirkei Avot, the brand new Pirkei Avot. Is it safe to say, especially based on the way we introduced this segment and with the 5 different eras that you pointed out and that you elucidate on in the book, is it safe to say that essentially all of these giants were giving, included in their teachings, these words of advice, these, you know, what ended up becoming Pirkei Avot, words to live by, so to speak, and together, it enjoyed a much higher level of popularity because it became 6 chapters of Pirkei Avot. In other words, even without it being compilated in this fashion, we would still have their wisdom, right, in some text, in some way, shape, or form. But the fact that it's been put together like this and handed down in this way has literally made it a book of ethics that, you know, has...
The editors of the Talmud were geniuses, and you were quite right. If they would have left these fragmentary teachings scattered throughout Shas, throughout the Talmud, they would still be beautiful, but it wouldn't be as accessible.
Right.
The very fact that they put them together as in a kind of form that could be published as a small booklet is very, very impressive, and it gives all of us an easy access to many, many brilliant ideas. Also, we should mention that the Pirkei Avot has been massively popular among Jewish communities throughout the world, throughout the generations. In many communities, the custom has been to read 1 chapter of Pirkei Avot each week between Pesach and Shavuot.
Right.
And among Ashkenazim, I think they go from Pesach all the way to Rosh Hashanah.
Right.
And the idea is that these ideas are relevant, meaningful. They're ways to renew ourselves. Sometimes people look at the Talmud or the Pirkei Avot, they say, these are old wisdom from old times. What does it have to say to us?
Mm.
Someone once asked me, why do you write a commentary on Pirkei Avot? It's such an old set of teachings, and there have been so many commentaries. What can you possibly add? My answer is that each generation has new eyes. Each generation has new needs. And we look to the antiquity, not to become ancient, but to see what we can derive from that antiquity that's relevant to us today. And the commentary that I wrote, I think, tries to do that. We try to bring in teachings not merely from the Chachamim, but we bring it from more contemporary rabbis, from philosophers, from thinkers, from psychologists, from historians, everyone adding some extra nuance, extra insight, so that when we read Pirkei Avot today, we read it through our eyes, not through the eyes of someone living in the Middle Ages, and not in the eyes of someone who's living 2,000 years ago.
So, for instance, when we're taught mitzvah goreret mitzvah, that's something that's relatively timeless, right? That's something that doesn't need much additional explanation, depending on on what conditions are in modern society. Let's say, essentially, that works everywhere. But there are other passages and other teachings that would be more easily interpreted in certain eras than others.
That is correct. The notorious passage is what we have, the passage of Pirkei Avot that said a man shouldn't speak too much with women.
Right.
Because this will lead to frivolity and inappropriate behavior.
Now, in this era, that's not a good thing to say publicly.
Well, in my commentary, I try to explain the historical context for that statement and say it really applies. One that should not speak to anyone who is ignorant or frivolous in a frivolous way, and that applies to men and to women. It's not only a prohibition of speaking to women in a frivolous way, but one shouldn't speak to men either. Mm. And likewise, the context that they were speaking in was one in which women very rarely had advanced education, so the likelihood of having a serious Torah or philosophical conversation between a man and a woman was less likely than it would be today. So that if we're talking about well-educated men and women, then of course they could talk with each other and should talk with each other in an intelligent way, right, without becoming frivolous. Right. And if you're talking about frivolous people who are ignorant anyway, then you shouldn't speak to men or to women. You should try to keep focused on the higher things to talk about.
Understood. All right, Dr. Mark Angel is with us, the Koran Pirkei Avot. It's his commentary. Unlike the mitzvah gereret mitzvah, which I pointed out earlier, one of the more straightforward multi-generational phrases, are there contradictions in Pirkei Avot? For instance, there is a mission in Pirkei Avot that says "V'lo hamidrash ikar ela hamaseh," and that means that the study is not the main thing, but doing something is the main thing. I would bet, and again, I'm no expert in Pirkei Avot, but I would assume that there are some passages that might contradict that or might alter things a bit and bring the level of the midrash a little higher than in this phrase. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're correct. As I said, we're talking about people who wrote over a period of spanning 300 years or so.
Right.
It's impossible or very unlikely that they all had exactly the same point of view on everything.
Right.
So it would be amazing if it was such a monolithic work that there were no differences of opinion. So, of course, there are differences of opinion and differences of nuance. So yes, of course, that's part of the beauty of the book. I think another part of the beauty of this particular book is that it challenges us to think. It doesn't give us dogmatic preachments and say, do it this way or else.
Mm.
There are preachments, there's no question about that, but then there are preachments that kind of modify it from different rabbis, different points of view. But basically, this book is a book that tells us, ladies and gentlemen, you're supposed to live moral, decent lives. You're supposed to be serving God. Here are our ideas towards those goals. You figure it out. You think about these things. You try to internalize these messages and see how that applies to your life.
Understood.
There are people who live their lives externally looking religious. They observe this, they observe that. They walk the walk, they talk the talk.
Right.
But in their heart and their soul, they're not in the relationship with God. This book is trying to tell us in so many different ways, ladies and gentlemen, you're walking your lives in the path of God. You got to remember that fact.
Yeah.
You got to live accordingly. It's a really religious book.
Yeah, understood. And it's more illegitimate than I originally thought for me to point out contradictions for the reasons you just said. And on top of that, I think because it has become, at least for some of us, such a part of davening, I'm from the community that does say it from Pesach to Rosh Hashanah, that we treat it a little bit differently, maybe not take it as seriously as what you just described. And certainly, just like we take certain Musar Sfarim seriously, this one deserves at least that much attention.
I think it observes more. There's a famous, one of my favorite passages in the Talmud is in Psachim 50a. It tells a story about Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi's son, who was Rabbi Yosef, who became ill and he died. And of course, everyone was very sad.
Right.
And then suddenly, somehow, Rabbi Yosef came back to life. This was one of these near-death experiences. So Rabbi Yosef ben Levi is amazed. His son came back to life. They're all very happy. They're rejoicing. And he says, just a second, this is amazing. Nobody that we know of went to the other side and came back to tell us about it. Mm. Yes, son, you went to the other world. What did you see there? And Rabbi Yosef says, Father, you'll never believe it. Olam hafuch ra'iti. I saw a topsy-turvy world. People who in this world are very important, in the next world are nothing. Mm. People in the next world, in this world who are nothing, in the next world are very respected. So the Rabbi Yosef ben Levi says, no, son. Olam barur ra'ita. You saw the world the way it really is. Human beings live in a life of illusion. We don't know who's important and who's not important. And externally, it looks like so-and-so has power, so-and-so has money, so-and-so has prestige. That's what it looks like to us. But how does it look like to the, in the eyes of God? In the eyes of God, that person who has all these great, powerful things and looks very successful may be very corrupt, may be very, very arrogant, egotistical, has very bad qualities. And there are other people who are poor and simple and not very pretentious and not very successful in life externally, but they're pious and they're beautiful souls and they're good people. In the eyes of God, they're very high. So the point of the Pirkei Avot is to cast away illusions. Don't judge others, including don't judge ourselves, by external standards. Try to get to the core of who we are as human beings. Try not to be deceived by external things. Towards the Pirkei Avot at the end, it says, don't be jealous, don't be coveting to sit at the table of kings, because your table is better than their table. What does it mean? I mean, some people say they want to rub shoulders with VIPs, they want to look very important, they want to sit at the table of the king. They want to say they had a meeting with the president of the United States. They met this VIP, this important person, and somehow they feel that that makes them important. The Pirkei Avot says, don't fool yourselves. Don't chase after nonsense. The most important table is your table. Make your table a holy table, a sacred table, a table full of righteousness and goodness. That's what your goal of life is, not the illusions and falseness.
Wow.
And I think that's what the Pirkei Avot is about. The Pirkei Avot is trying to tell us that the sages try to focus on what's real in life and not what's fake, not shadows, not illusions. And that's why I feel this book is so powerful. I feel it tries to open within us our own eyes, not just to judge others, but more importantly, to judge ourselves. This is a book that each person should read quietly to himself and to herself and to think about it and to see how in the world can these ideas help shape me into a better person.
Wow, fantastic. All right, Dr. Marky D. Angel is with us, the Koren Pirkei Avot. Go to korenpub.com for information, korenpub.com. A couple of things I want to point out. For instance, I mean, just looking at some of the famous passages, Yehuda ben Tema, he's quoted in Perek Hey. Gives different stages in life. At 5 years old, Mikra. 10 years old, Mishnah. 13, Mitzvos, Bar Mitzvah, of course. And continues to all the different things, some of which I've been paying attention to some of the higher numbers recently.
Right.
Like,
don't we all?
Like, yeah. 40 is Bina, 50 is Eitzah, Shishim is Zikna, etc., etc. Are these simply guideposts? Is this simply a poetic way of looking at life, or is there something deeper, especially based on what you just told us, is there something deeper to a Mishnah like this?
I think that, of course, there's always something deeper, but I think that what he's trying to say is we all are not this, we don't go through life as one person. Mm-hmm. When you look at a picture of yourself right now, let's say you're 50, 60, 70, however old you are, 20 even, and you look at your baby picture, and you say, how could that be me? Right. How is it possible that I am that same person? And yet, you are the same person in a certain sense. You have the same genes, the same, you're the same identity. On the other hand, you grow, you change, your needs change, your insights change. And besides that, you change physically, you also change emotionally, spiritually. And I think what this message in the Pirkei Avot is, life has its stages, it has its rhythms, and we follow those rhythms, but we shouldn't follow them thinking that they're destiny. We have freedom within that rhythms. It's not just that we're forced from birth to death to follow a certain pattern, and we're going to be born, we're going to have a bar mitzvah, we're going to get married, we're going to have kids, we're going to have grandkids, and we're going to die. Okay, thank you. Anyone knows those things. I don't think that's what the rabbi is teaching us here. He's teaching us each of those stages is a challenge, saying, at this stage in your life, who are you? At this stage in your life, with this strength and this degree of intelligence and this degree of learning and this degree of experience, who are you now? And each generation, each part of our lives, we give different answers, even though we're the same person.
Fantastic. What can you tell us, in addition to what we already know, about Lo Alecha Hamlacha Ligmor, V'lo Ata Ben Chorin Lihibatel Mimena?
Rabbi Tafon gave wonderful advice. I remember when I was a doctoral student, I was writing my doctoral dissertation at Yeshiva University. It was a history of the Jews of the Island of Rhodes. That was the first book that I eventually published. And I was interested in the Island of Rhodes because my grandparents on my father's side came from Rhodes, so there's a long story why I did that. And I was finding as I was doing more and more research, and those days it was pioneering research, no one had done any work really to speak of about the Jews of Rhodes, and I was really trying to find all kinds of sources, and I was working and working and working and looking for this clue and that archive and this archive, and I was never getting ahead. So my wife, who is a genius, she tells me, Mark, Lo Alecham L'chal Digmor, your job is to finish this book, and you don't have to find every last detail. The person will come after you. You'll write a second edition, and you'll fix it then. But if you wait till you have it to perfection, you're never going to finish. And of course, because he was so smart, I finished the dissertation, I got a PhD, and I wrote many other things since then. But that's always been a guiding light to me. Everyone's obligated to do what the Almighty gives you strength to do. Some are write books, some give radio programs, some are singers, some are doctors. Every one of us has something, and we're supposed to do the best we can. If we say, I'm not going to do it until I'm perfect, then none of us will do anything. You just do what you can do, the best that you can do, and you could correct it later on. And if you don't correct it, okay, someone else will correct it. You don't have to feel that a whole burden of the universe is on your shoulders. You do what you can do to the best of your ability. We're not answerable to anybody except the Almighty.
You don't understand how timely and appreciated your explanation is. Ben Zoma and Perek Dalet, also somewhat of a poet and somebody who was able to say things in a short phrase. Ezehu chacham halomein miklo adam. Ezehu gibor kaveshet yitzro. Ezehu ashir hasamech b'chalkam. I mean, these are adages that we live by from youth straight into adulthood and old age. Did he in fact have a unique ability to say it all in just a few words?
He was very wise, of course, but poor Ben Zoma, if you know the story, he was one of those rabbis who entered the Pardes, and he didn't do very well when he came out. He kind of lost his mind. So he had a very complicated life. He was searching for truth, and the truth kind of eluded him. But it's very important also to note that what he taught was not just his wisdom, but it was kind of a universal wisdom. A lot of ancient sages were saying very similar ideas. And that's another thing that we should know, that our rabbis were great teachers and great wise people, but they weren't the only wise people in antiquity. So, for example, the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, great Chinese, he said, this is a quotation, if you understand others, you are smart. If you understand yourself, you are illuminated. If you overcome others, you are powerful. If you overcome yourself, you have strength. If you know how to be satisfied, you are rich. Well, Ben Zoma said the same idea.
Right.
So wisdom transcends geographical location. And that's another thing that's very important that people often miss. They think our sages lived in a bubble, and they weren't aware of what's going on in the universe, and their wisdom was a very parochial wisdom, and that's false. Our rabbis were phenomenal minds, and I don't think that Ben Zoma knew about Lao Tzu. I don't think he read Chinese philosophy or knew. I'm not even sure where they lived at the same time.
Yeah, but he also didn't know the advantage of the 21st century soundbite, and it seems he got it many, many years before.
That's correct. But there's certain universal wisdom that our sages were able to plug themselves into that other wise people from other lands also understood. And that's why I think this book has a universal flavor to it. The Pirkei Avot was not written... let me take that back. It was written for Jews. It was written for people who follow the Torah. But its value, it transcends just the Jewish community. Just as reading a Chinese philosopher could influence all of us, even if we're not Chinese, so the wisdom of a Jewish thinker could influence everyone in the world, even if they're not Jewish.
Yeah. I wonder if some people are stay away from it only because it really starts with the whole Jewish tradition. That's how Pirkei Avot begins, you know, with really, it seems, a spotlight on the fact that it's, you know, made for the Jewish community. I wonder if that keeps people away from exploring it.
It might. It might. I think that's a shame.
Yeah,
I think 100%. That non-Jews would gain a great deal from this book.
Finally, Rabbi Angel, I can't let you go without asking you about a specific phrase. You probably already know which one I mean, you being such an amazing rabbinic figure. The Mishnah tells us in Perek Aleph Mishnah Yud, Shmaya Omer, Ehov Etamlacha Usnat HaRabanut. So how should we interpret that and live with that phrase?
Well, I know how rabbis interpret it. They say, hate the rabbinate. It's a difficult profession, and as anyone will who's been a rabbi knows. I think what he's really saying is one should be leery of people in power. Not rabbanut being rabbis. One should despise or should hate or should be reluctant to get involved with people who are power hungry, power grabbers, because they seem to like you and they use you when they need you, but they dump you as soon as they don't need you. I think he's trying to tell us, don't be deluded, don't follow illusions. Don't think that because someone has a certain power and they try to kiss up to you that they really like you. Don't fall for that trap. If everyone followed that advice, by the way, then we'd never have any Jewish people in positions of power. That would be a mistake. Right. So that's why I think that his advice has to be taken in a limited way. It means even if you are in a position where you must deal with people in power, recognize their limitations and recognize that you should maintain your own humility. Don't lose perspective on who you are, even when you're in the company of people of great power.
What a great message. All right, Mark Angel, Rabbi Emeritus, Congregation Sheirat Israel in New York City. He is he has the commentary on the New Earth Edition, brand new Koran Perkei Avot. It is amazing as Rabbi Angel's discussion was with us. The Perkei Avot with the translation, the commentary is really wonderful. Thank you so much. I enjoyed this tremendously.
Thank you. So did I. I really appreciate it.
Hatzlacha Rabbah. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Information about Rabbi Angel and his International Rabbinic Fellowship, jewishideas.org. Again, that's jewishideas.org. Our thanks to everybody at Koran Publications. Every single week, they seem to be able to present to us and provide for us another interesting author with another interesting work, the Koran Pirkei Avot, and everything that you could possibly imagine from Koran is available if you go to their website at korenpub.com, korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Look for these amazing titles. They do an amazing and fantastic job in releasing these works to the public. You're listening to the Nachum Segal Network. Buy the Book is brought to you by our friends at Koren Publications, korenpub.com. I remind you, when you go to Facebook, make sure to like our Facebook update page, Nachum Segal Network, on Twitter at Nachum Segal Net, on Instagram at Nachum Nachum Segal Network. Get involved in our social media and be up to date on everything that we're presenting on a regular basis right here at the Nachum Segal Network. This edition of Buy the Book from Koren Publications, a proud presentation of us here at NSN.